Because my life is chaos. Good chaos, good problems.
Yeah.
Yes, brother. Okay. All right, let's do this. So
I can get it.
Let's get it. This is for Clementine and Otis. All right, let's start with some shout-outs to our sponsors. Firstly, the Survival Apnea course. Holy fucking shit, man. It's changing my life, that thing. That course is so amazing by Augusto Vegas. It's based on the philosophies of breath-holding techniques by freedivers. And Augusto's a big wave surfer from Peru, and he wanted to build his confidence in big waves. But also in his life as well. So I find, and he found, when you learn the techniques of holding your breath for long periods of time and finding peace in the struggle of fighting for air, it just translates into, apart from like really good cardiovascular fitness, it translates into just overall confidence in your everyday life. But for me personally, like I've just finished the course, and it really helps with getting me into these deeper levels of meditation that I've never experienced before. So post breath holding, I'll meditate and I just get really present and I get really deep. It's just been amazing. So if you want to learn more about it and do the course, you can go to survivalapnea.com. That's SURVIVALAPNEA.com and use code THTPODCAST and you'll get a 20% discount on the course, or simply click on the link in the episode show notes. Next one up is Indosol. Every week, I plug these guys. They've been with me from the start. Major sponsor. I love them. I mean, 2020, what a year. Had its ups and downs. Still produced weekly podcasts. And Indosol have stuck by me all through it without a doubt. And they're making motor vehicle tires, or they're getting motor vehicle tires, and they're turning them into footwear. And they're sick. They look good. I mean, my first ever pair lasted me 7 years, and I've had a bunch of pairs since, trying to style it up. So if you want to use code THT at checkout, you'll get a 15% discount, and, they deliver worldwide. They also have distributors worldwide. So delivery is fast and you'll be supporting conscious consumerism. Next and lastly, the Help Stephen Ellis Get a Car GoFundMe. I'm going back to that. Stephen is an amazing human. He's a double leg amputee. He has two young children. He needs a car so he can drive him around and also go skateboarding. Like, he's the raddest skater ever. We all love him. Such a good human, motivational speaker. He needs $20,000 so he can get a car that meets the Australian modification standards for his disability. We're up to $12,500, so we're almost there. We kind of slowed down around the $12,500 mark. And I want to say a big shout out to listener Ariane, I won't say her last name, from Berlin, Germany, who recently reached out to me and I assisted her with the donation. And it's just amazing. Like, Stove, if you hear this, you've got people all over the world looking out for you. So, you know, man, humans are awesome. I love humans sometimes. Most of them, except for Donald Trump, let's be fucking honest. All right, let's go.
I'm having a good time.
You are?
Yeah.
I can tell.
And we are rolling.
Terrible happy talks. Today's guest is Adam Everill. Adam is a community and international development specialist with a long history of leadership development and coaching. Recognized as one of Australia's leading young social entrepreneurs, he has delivered social innovation and leadership training to people from all over the world in corporate, civil society, and educational settings. Adam, however, found his passion in integrating health and fitness with personal and community development, growing two startups, the Equal Playing Field and Guerrilla Development. Adam is best known as the co-founder and co-CEO of Equal Playing Field. He led the organization through its development from idea to fully funded organization, including the attraction of over $8 million Australian dollars in funding from various corporate, private, and government donors. Equal Playing Field has gained international notoriety as emerging best practice with programming in the post-conflict locations of Bougainville in Papua New Guinea and the Solomon Islands. Adam's charismatic and sincerity in being of service to the world is inspiring and infectious as well. So today he's with me to share his journey, experiences, challenges, and hopes for the future. Adam Everill, welcome. How are you, brother?
What's up, brother? I just realised you look like my cousin.
Dude, he must be. Straight up. What is he, short, bald? And
he's a legend. He's an ex-con.
Ex-convict?
But he made such a good life for himself and his family. I'm really proud of him, actually.
Yeah. Did he learn the error of his ways and actually rehabilitated?
Yeah, he did, man. He did like seven stints in like different facilities and stuff, and then came. I put this closer.
Thanks, bro.
I don't know if that was the signal. Or,
kind of was.
Yeah, kiss the mic a little bit. Yeah, and he found the error of his ways. I met him just before, like not met him, but I was hanging out with him just before he found the error of his ways. And I was getting up to some massive mischief with him, like real bad mischief, actually, that would have put him back in prison. But we both found our way to a better place.
Do you think that people have to hit a rock bottom in terms of finding their purpose or getting into a positive mindset?
No, but that's where all the good stories come from. Who the fuck wants to watch that TV show? And he was always okay, and then he became great. Like, no one wants to watch that. So
yeah, I know.
You know, he was
always so boring.
So I mean, like, I guess a lot of people who go through shit want to help people not go through shit. You know, but that's what got them there. It's a weird sort of thing. You know what I mean?
You're someone that likes to help people.
Yeah.
Is it because you went through shit?
I think so, yeah. I think that's a big part of it. I don't know. I was really attracted to, like, I've analyzed this a lot. I think, like, people, but especially men, really want to be heroes, you know? And I think, like, I always wanted to be a hero. That can sound like a proper wanker thing to say, but yeah.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I don't think it's a wanker thing to say at all. But it's funny, I think it's a real Australianism where if you're honest like that and you do exude confidence, you're a wanker or you're a tall poppy and we want to chop you down.
Yeah.
And there's like this element of like shame associated with it, like, oh, I shouldn't say that. People want to cut me down. I'm like,
yeah. I guess that's just me being honest, but I still probably feel most comfortable not saying stuff out loud, but just doing it almost like I can fall into the trap of being a martyr, I guess. And I think that is because of that sort of pressure you know, that kind of societal pressure. But I thought of myself once I got to like 13, 14, I started playing in bands and stuff. I was like, I'm going to be like Bono or like Zach De La Rocca. Like, I'm going to be like a fucking rock star. I'm going to save the world with my music, you know? And then, you know, life beat me down a little bit. And I was like, and then I got a little bit older and I was like, oh, I can be an activist. I can help people through marching the streets. And as time went on, I learned that words don't mean shit. A lot of people talk, very few take action, and very few take action repeatedly after get kicked in the teeth, you know?
Would you describe yourself as a doer?
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes it doesn't feel like that, but I've got up on my wall, I've got this poster that says "Get Shit Done." I work in two speeds. It's like fucking nothing's happening or everything's happening. I remember after like losing so many attempts at funding from UN Women, the head of UN Women in Papua New Guinea said to me, he looked at me, it was a compliment, but he's like, you know, you're a real trier. I don't know if I've ever heard that term. And it's like you're a real try, man. He's like well done. But he felt like it was almost pity because he'd watched me so many times, like put the hours in to try and get certain pockets of funding, and he's like, fuck, is this not happening?
Mm.
I'm not always, admittedly, I don't always do things the most efficiently, but I just won't stop.
So like when you have a vision or a goal, it's kind of just like, you do whatever you can to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I meant about the kind of martyrdom things. Like, I could probably do it better and not have to be a martyr, but, yeah. but like, you know, and just fucking suffer through it.
Suffer through it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't know. You just really made me think about the whole notion of, I just remember this story. I knew this woman and she was actually a chronic, like, alcoholic and drug addict. And she's a lovely person, friend of a friend. And someone, a doctor said to her at a rehab once, he said, you're a chronic, relapser. You just, you know, you can't stop relapsing.
Yeah.
And she went, nah, fuck you. I'm a chronic trier.
You know? Yeah.
And I was like, it's a good way to look at it. It's like, well, you know, have you really failed unless you've stopped trying?
Yeah.
You know, is that a mantra that you sort of have in your mind?
Yeah, man. I've like we push it to like all our staff over in PNG. I say it to my kids all the time. It's just like that whole, man, my favorite movie quote is actually from Rocky VI. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, he came back when he was old?
No, yeah, when he came back when he's old, man. Fucking tell you what, so underrated. It's up there with the first one.
Yeah.
But he's talking to his son and he's like saying, doesn't matter how many times you get hit, like it's about, you know, how many times you get up and keep moving forward. You got to keep moving forward. I listen to that and every time I get psyched up, I get so pumped. I listened to it the night before I did the big run. We'll kind of chat a little bit about before, but I'm all about that. I've got this story that I tell a fair bit because it just resonates so much with me. My best mate, we weren't best mates at the time, but we were about 12 in grade 7. We're walking home and we're at this creek embankment. It's like 6 foot down, like slippery down to the creek. And he's like, oh yeah, you want to wrestle? It's like a group of dudes like around a big circle. It's like, it wasn't a fight, but it was like, you know, dudes doing what they do. And he wrestled me stronger than me, threw me down the thing. I climbed back up the mud. Okay, let's go again. Threw me down. It kept going and going. We did it probably like 12 or 13 times before he said to me, he's like, dude, I think we should just stop. Like, you know, and I was like, oh, yeah, all right, I guess so. But like I kept going and going and going at him. And that was kind of like, that's sort of symbolic of the attitude. It's like, I'll just get my ass kicked, but I'll keep going because you'll quit and I won't. And Red, because I know he listens to podcasts, he doesn't really. But I finally tapped him out about 20 years later. I was so happy about it.
I tapped him out. Did you BJJ?
Yeah. And
I could kind of tell.
And I was like, it's probably the year.
Yeah. I didn't want to say anything.
And I very, very humbly, he hurt me in the process. But I was like, remember when he threw me down that embankment? Never forgot.
I love that attitude and approach to life, like it's tenacious, you know. But at what point is it detrimental in the big scale of your life? Like, is it to the point of, like, just that stubbornness? I mean, does it get you in a lot of trouble as well in terms of should you have given up and it would have been more beneficial?
I'd say that it's been helpful but painful. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know the end. Like, it's hard. It's like even today when I walked in today, I was like, both of us were like, oh, not like the best day. And that'll color the way that, like, I speak about things today. You know what I mean? Instead of, like, some days I'll be, like, fucking charged and optimistic and be, like, you know, it'll be a completely different color. But I think, look, if I didn't have that mentality, I would never have my organization. No fucking chance, man. Like, we got our ass kicked constantly before we got the big money. Like, no, like, everyone told me to stop. My oldies deny the fact that they did, but I heard it constantly. Like, you've done, you know, you've been putting it in for a long time. You know, you're making no money. I think it's just time to move on. I heard that so many times. It's the same story for, like, all entrepreneurs, you know, and, like, social entrepreneurs, and they're different. When you start something, 95% of them fail. Like, it's like anything. And I think that why it fails for most people is because they quit. They just don't keep going. And of course, there's got to be an end point, but it's like, that's why I love fucking really long runs, man. because that's the same mentality. It's like so many people quit before their true endpoint. And like that's my distance. I'm done. It's like, nah.
I can't believe you're saying this because my last podcast, that was like I told a story about Bill Murray. I'm not going to retell the story, but about Bill Murray said, I watched this awesome clip and he was telling a story about he was going to kill himself. He was shit at acting, got rejected, rejected, rejected. And then the day he was going to kill himself and he didn't. He coincidentally was walking home and ended up in front of this dramatic arts institute in Chicago and then met the owner or the director and then got him his first role. And it was like, and he was like, don't give up before the miracle happens. Yeah. And it's always darkest before the dawn.
For
right?
sure.
I mean, these are philosophies that drive me as well.
Yeah.
But can you, for those that are unaware, can you tell us about your, I mean, how would you describe it as a social enterprise, equal playing field or?
It's a community development organization, but I think like I always explain equal playing field like a startup because like I had a bit of a hiatus years later and worked in like innovation and entrepreneurship. And I realized like organizations are startups. Like there's some differences, but the similarities are crazy. So my organization is called Equal Playing Field. It used to be called Rugby League Against Violence because PNG is like nuts for footy. So me and Jackie, co-founder, local, we met at a youth leadership, a change makers conference in Delhi in India.
Epic.
Weird shit. And I'd like been studying STI and HIV prevalence in PNG for a fucking essay. It was just like the most random serendipity. And I sat across from this girl, like introduced myself and she's like, Papua New Guinea. I was like, oh yeah, like fuck, I've just been learning. And then 3 days later, there's a photo of us. She showed it to me years later as a photo of me walking up to her at an embassy somewhere. And I was like, I think we should do something. Like your folks love footy. I had a background in footy coaching and stuff and playing but I had this love of like community development and I knew that the issues of violence against women were atrocious, the highest in the world. And I was like, I've seen them use stuff in Australia, like footy, to try and deal with some of these issues. Like we could do a project. And it started just with like, oh, you know, raise some money, we'll do a project. And that's kind of where it started. And we did that, raised a bit of money. I raised the first $4,000 with a concert just down here with Sticky Fingers.
No way.
Yeah. Before they were like big.
I love those guys.
Yeah, before they were big. And getting in trouble for saying shit about women or whatever.
What do you mean they did?
Yeah, one of them got.
In their lyrics?
No. Sorry, not saying stuff, but one of them, I think there was a case or something. I think it all got kind of squashed and I won't comment to it. But my experience of those guys, I don't condone shit behavior ever, but my experience of those guys was obviously positive. I think sometimes being in that position can get you in some icky, you know, situations where drugs and alcohol and ego make you a fucking asshole. But I digress. We were just young, two kids like wanting to make a difference and like you got no fucking idea, like no fucking true idea. And I just started going over. I already had kids. I had one kid already. Started raising some money, going over with a backpack on and just trying to like learn.
No way.
And like sleeping in the slums and just like talking to people, trying to learn the language. We just started developing some ideas and our ideas have changed massively since then. They started with like wanting to work with adults and we quickly realized like the tickets to work with kids. And so we went from working in schools to now we work in schools. We've got a really comprehensive, respectful relationship education program, considered best practice in the Pacific. We've got, we're working with like teacher colleges. So we teach the teachers in teacher colleges, working with teachers in schools. Developed the first PNG's first whole of school approach to preventing and responding to child abuse and school-related gender-based violence.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it started off with this little thing, like we wanted to work to prevent violence against women, so we thought we'd work with young men and young women to help them have better relationships. Realised that none of the teachers in the whole bloody country have child protection training, and we're like, fuck, that's a massive gap. So we moved into child protection, which has become actually probably even the biggest focus for us, and then looked at the system of teaching teachers and said, well, forget about trying to do this after the fact. Let's go to the colleges. And so now we're in – next year we'll be in, I think, five of the 12 – or six of the 12 teacher colleges in the country.
Amazing.
Delivering child protection education to the staff there and trying to set up like a longer term structure for them to be teaching it to every new, like our goal is to teach every new teacher this shit. And then, you know, we want to be in, we're trying to set up this framework for schools where basically, you know, they know how to refer kids that are having cases of child abuse. Their teachers are trained in child protection, where they have where kids are educated in the right way about how to treat each other, where they understand the rules of engagement in relationships and shit that I didn't learn, man.
Yeah,
I didn't fucking learn that. It was horrible. When I learned that stuff in my 20s, I was really reflective and like, oh, I did some stuff that I'm not proud of when I was younger, you know. I don't know that of a lot of men. Yeah,
I think a lot of it's ignorance. I don't think it's deliberate. I think 100%. It's just straight ignorance.
I certainly wasn't a bad kid, and I don't think a lot of boys are bad. They fall into that, like, oh, this is how we talk about women. This is how, oh, we can just touch. We can do, you know. It's all a bit of a weird game mixed in with hormones, you know.
And it's a learnt behaviour.
100%. Yeah,
it's passed through the generations, maybe.
Yeah, I learned from, usually you learn from, you look for a role model, and if you don't, if you're disconnected from your, we usually push our fathers away at a certain age. It's kind of the developmental process. We're looking for other role models, and if we don't have it in a strong coach or whatever, we find the next age group up, and it's usually, you know, 16-year-old boys who are like, fucking grab their tits, fucking, you know, like just filthy lads. And that's definitely what I found. I found some footy blokes who spoke in a way that I started to emulate, never felt it in here, but the way that I would like speak was kind of, that's how I would fall into it.
But also that's a product of wanting to fit in with the pack.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, like, I mean, you get a group of 16-year-old boys, I mean, that's a powerful little entity of a pack mentality, you know.
Yeah.
And then when you, like you said, you're verbalizing that, because what are you trying to do? You're trying to fit in with the pack, man.
Yeah, so I mean, and that's kind of what we're trying to reverse. We're trying to create cultures where we're trying to shift cultural norms. So look at negative cultural norms. So the cultural norms over there, if you look at PNG, it's like, you think about what we have here, over there's mental, because it's fine to hit your wife. The amount of times I saw like a woman be dragged out in the street and people just stand around, and I'm trying to step in between it. Stepped in between a knife fight one night, like crazy stuff. And it's just what? Like people will hear it and be like, oh, it's happening. You know what I mean? And now the tide's changing a little bit. And like we work with these younger people, and the idea is like, when you see that shit, you call it out. Yeah.
Well, my question to you is like, why PNG? Like, I know, okay, obviously because they have a lot of social problems. I mean, as a minimum, they've got a lot of other problems. Yeah. But what originally drew you to that region then, to make that sort of change?
Yeah.
Is there a connection there personally? Or?
It comes back to the kind of the other theme. It's like I feel like you should – I always felt like you should go where you can do the most good.
Yeah.
And PNG is not a glamorous place. People think it's in the Pacific. Port Moresby has been on the list of the five most least livable cities, the five least livable cities in the world for forever. I got a lot of friends there. I spent a lot of time there. It's not an amazing place to live. It's not really dangerous, too dangerous for me. It's definitely dangerous for women there for sure. It's dangerous for men there, locals. And it can be dangerous for people who flash their money around that are not locals, that are expats. But yeah, not glamorous at all. But for me, I was like, well, I coached footy for a while, and I played footy when I was younger. I knew rugby league, and I had an international health degree. I just felt like that's where I could do the most good. Made sense. So, you know, yeah, Fiji maybe would have been like cruisier, but you go where you can make the most good. And again, like it was the what we call the settlements in Moresby that we're kind of hanging in to begin with. And it's not glamorous.
And they're one of our closest neighbors, let's face it.
They are our closest. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Closest geographically.
No way, man. Dude. You just said that you broke up a knife fight. I know it's on a massive tangent.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. I get the vibe that you're kind of tough. I don't know why I'm saying this out loud, but you also said that you're into like MMA and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as well. Has that been a big part of your story?
Yeah, look, that I think that incident was before I
before the MMA.
Maybe I just started. Yeah, I used to be like a heavy boy. I was active when I was young, and then
from rugby league.
Yeah, I was active when I was playing league, and then got into a bunch of drugs, drank heaps when I was like from like teens, and then just like. Injuries and like just slipped into like a real shitty like lifestyle until like my late mid-20s. I just got fat and unhealthy and like, yeah.
I can't imagine it.
Yeah, definitely was. And so I think actually it was at, yeah, I'm actually quite sure it was right at the as I was getting a little bit healthier. So I probably just started training, but this guy was, he was dragging her out by the hair. Yeah, God. Dragging her out from the pokies at this place we were staying. It was the first time we were doing like this big, would have been in 2014. So maybe I just started training, yeah. And he dragged her out. But I was always someone who wanted to defend. But that's probably, it's kind of a big reason why I wanted to do it. Like I always had this compulsion to like want to help. I'd seen it before in a street, a really big guy dragging a girl down the street, and I felt powerless because like, what the fuck am I going to do?
Mm.
Me and another mate were like, we'll jump on his back, and like, we couldn't have done shit at that stage, you know? Mm. And I had the shit kicked out of me when I was in my high school years. So I think that kind of came together. So martial arts has been awesome. I'm a big proponent of martial arts. I think it's, I teach it down at Ghetto Movement down here. I teach it just a little bit of striking, just basic striking, but train out at Freestyle. Best gym in the world.
Do you know Alexander Volkanovsky?
Sure do. He's a lovely human man.
I hear.
A really, really great guy. And he was before he was a champ. And
yeah.
he's really great. And he's punched me in the face quite a few times. Yeah. But I love it, man. So I'm just a blue belt, like BJJ. And
just a blue belt. That's still pretty solid.
Oh, blue belt's good. Look, solid. Blue belt for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, anyone who gets to blue belt like should be pretty stoked. But yeah, so I like getting tougher. I wouldn't call myself a tough guy. I think some people see me that now, but I see my journey, you know. Still a little baby in there.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by it because I mean I have the same propulsion. Like I mean I'm really into kickboxing, Muay Thai.
Yeah.
And there's an element of that art form. And you can sit up there. my back's
I fucking shit back.
I was like, yeah, so have I. And I was like, I'm sitting in the corner going, my back's going. I'm going to sit up here. This is all right. Is that you comfy?
Yeah, this is
better. You can kick that blanket on the ground if you like.
I dig this, and that's all right.
Yeah, I'm just curious by like, I often ask like, why I'm attracted to watching that stuff. I don't know if it's something primal deep within me as a man that just feels this need to be able to overpower another man.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's that or it's the science and the art and the movement of it. Like I just love how it looks sometimes and having to use your mind and your body at the same time, especially when you're throwing punches and kicks and knees and elbows and then what you do and with the wrestling and the grappling. Yeah, and I often wonder, is it because I have this real innate insecurity? Mm. And is it a good outlet for men to actually help with that insecurity? I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, my whole organization was built around like trying to stop men being violent, right?
Yeah, right.
And I really believe in martial arts. I think it matters.
As an outlet.
I think it matters how you're taught. You know, my journey through all of this has been like probably polar opposites, because I really lost what I would say my masculine in the very beginning. I was very into sort of the dominant kind of emerging feminist theory when it came to the way that we presented our education to young people. I mean, there's a lot of value in it, but it kind of some of it came from a real anti-man standpoint.
Gotcha.
And so I, at in the beginning, even myself, I'd kind of you got to be careful how you use these words, but I guess been somewhat feminized. Like I'd given away any idea that I should have like physical power, and so I was weak and I was fat and I was, you know, and I wouldn't. But I was also really unhappy like that. And actually, like if I was honest, you know, like I did need to have power, and it did make me feel weak when I couldn't protect someone, you know. And I think that I think women should want to as well. I think we should all want to be able to protect against some motherfucker who wants to hurt us, our kids, or anyone around that doesn't deserve to be hurt, or you know. I think it can be all the things you spoke about. Unless you I was so against the UFC that I wrote into the footy show as like a person, and they addressed it when I was talking about like violent, like the punch ups, how it shouldn't be glorified and stuff, and like in State of Origin, like we shouldn't glorify this is bullshit, and then I went on this whole thing about the UFC, how it's barbaric. I found it so barbaric, and then I watched UFC 1, 2, 3, 4. Someone got me into it, and the story of it, and like the little guy against the big guy, and I was like, wow, this is. There's something that connects with all the stories of all of the history of humankind, and I just started to get into it. And when I started training, just changed my life. It has made me way less aggressive, 100%.
Can't believe you're saying this.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely has. And now I have a confidence. Like I used to be afraid to go out. And like I would walk down the street and I was like, this could be, because it had happened to me. Like this could be, someone could pop out. And now I'm like, I'm worried about that, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'll be able to handle myself, which is a nice, it's a nice feeling. And actually when you walk into a room, when you like, there's a certain confidence that it gives you, which I think is beneficial. Now, if you come from a camp, like from a school that there's a bunch of assholes, and I've been in them before, it can do the opposite, and you can create monsters, and that's the shit that needs to be stopped. It's not like we can't paint it with this black and white thing to say we shouldn't be training men to be fighters or women to be fighters. I think it's like, you know, understand the power of your art. Certainly is an art.
Oh, it's so an art.
Yeah.
That's what I love about it. Like I said, the thinking that goes into it. But I want to go back a little bit, because we're talking about sort of gender roles. Mm. Do you feel like there's a lot of men in our society who are a little bit lost and confused as to what their role is?
Yeah.
These days?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think
I mean, like you use the word that you said, the term like – that you may have been feminized, which I can understand why you would feel like that. I know, like, I mean, have you heard of the White Ribbon Day, for example?
Yeah.
White Ribbon.
Yeah.
I mean, we incorporated into the public school system in Australia, and we did it in Bali as well. And that particular campaign really starts to talk about the statistics around domestic violence, and they're shocking, and they're real, and they're legitimate statistics. But I also found the kickback from a lot of the male, young male students, 16, 17-year-old boys, men, young men,
yeah,
just felt really oppressed by having those stats thrown around constantly in that week.
Yeah.
And it just made me feel like we need to advocate against domestic violence.
Yeah.
But are we doing it in a way that's not oppressing men?
Those boys just need to harden the fuck up. It's a week, kids. No, you know what I mean? Like you know, you can take things, you can take shit like that.
But there's another argument where there's a majority of men who are not violent.
Fuck yeah.
Against women.
If you're not violent against women, you don't have those tendencies. You should be like, fuck, this is like, any percentage is not okay. What you shouldn't be okay with is the segment of whether it's males or females that try to paint everything that is traditionally masculine as toxic masculinity. That's when we've got a problem. So that's what people like to do this huge black and white thing, and then you can't pass out the differences. When actually most reasonable people think fucking a woman should never be assaulted, raped, beaten, and any of that. That should never happen. But like to say that every man is guilty just by being a man, it's like, well, what the fuck do I do with that? So instead, like, how about we talk about how we'd be good dudes? Like, so how I explain what we do in PNG is like we're trying to teach young people how to be good people. Like that, it's like and also to not like, it's so challenging. This is true of adults as well. Like the whole idea of consent, right? Like it's actually really complicated. We actually teach both sides of it. Like we have to teach young men and young women to have boundaries, to say when something's pushing their boundary, and we need to teach someone to understand when they've gone past that boundary, or to try and get consent before they do something, right? But in the nature of human contact, you might think something's going on and it's not for her, or she feels awkward or whatever because of how she's been brought up, whatever it might be, a million different factors. And you might be feeling like you're getting a signal. You might go for something and then she's like, oh, you know, gives you a look or might say no, or whatever it is. You need to be equipped to register those things. You need to be socially aware. That's more than just intimate relationships. That's like we all need to be more aware in all relationships. But those subtleties are things we need to teach. And the real clear ones we definitely need to teach. So to teach young women, hey, like if you don't want to be touched, you can say no. Hugely powerful and important, especially in a place like PNG. Massively important here for sure. If you want to be touched, then all good, you know. But at the same time, like but for both sides, but definitely for boys to understand, like if she looks uncomfortable and she doesn't say, maybe she's not saying no, but she's not saying yes, that's a sign for you, buddy.
We need to teach them to read the cues, right?
Yeah, sure.
Because like it's 90% of communication is body language and tone, and
yeah,
it's not even verbal communication. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it is. It's a very refined form of communication. You have to be so delicate and sensitive with it. And I love that you're sort of saying that. Like I think so much of it comes back to communication, but empathy. Like put yourself in someone else's shoes.
Man, I cried over this, and I know other men that have cried over it in training when we teach them how to be facilitators and stuff. But like I would remember back to like there's a time when I like put my hand down a girl's pants. It was far too drunk. I was drunk too, but like I didn't – it was all a kind of a game for me at the time. I didn't – but like to reflect back on it when I was older and be like, fuck, that wasn't cool. It was – and that like that certainly happened more than one time. And that – the reason why I say that and I don't shy away from it is because like having to reflect on that and think about how that may have made those women feel when I got into my 20s and I did some training, that's what led to my organization, you know. So if I don't speak to that truth, if I don't say that I did that, then I could have never started the organization.
Wow, man. Like, it's really brave of you to speak up like that. I love it. Thank you, you know. And I think a lot of other people will thank you for that honesty, because I think denial is a big problem as well. Mm. I do want to go back, though, to where, like, a little bit more about you and where you grew up and where you started out as a young person. Yeah. So you grew up in which part of Australia?
Figgy, man.
So in Wollongong. So on the southeast coast of Australia in Wollongong, suburb of Fig Tree.
Yeah.
Great. And how would you reflect on your childhood then as a whole from the age of, say, like 0 to 10?
Yeah, yeah. Sweet middle class, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, middle class. My parents, happy birthday to my mum, 65 years old. She's a fucking legendary human.
That's so cool.
She's a beautiful woman. Man, like, the amount of times I've gone and, like, thought about my shot, like, I, in a lot of ways, really, really lucky. But I left home at like 16. So it was interesting. I was just always like I rocked the boat, you know? And like, me and my dad, we clashed a lot. Like,
okay.
He was my hero until I was a rebellious teen, but we were really lucky. Like, we never had a lot of money, but mum and dad were both teachers. My mum lost her dad and was raised by a single mum. My grandfather was a Victoria Cross winner, like a fucking war hero, like amazing. But like, my mum had to become a mum of her siblings really young. So she was always like, there was just an interesting dynamic that I've always reflected on. Mum's this real nurturer. Dad, again, like, they both grew up poor. So like, we had money, but you definitely didn't know it. Like, we had like the least amount of pocket money of all the kids in the school.
Frugal.
Like, you don't get lifts nowhere, fucking walk. It's all that stuff. It's like, yeah, like, learn. Which has served me well, you know what I mean? It has. But at the time I was like, fuck you guys, like, hard as money. my kids get way more. Maybe I've got to make it happen a bit more. But yeah, look, and we lived in the States when I was 7 we did like what's it called, exchange for a year. Like, we're kind of really blessed in that way. But again, like, mum and dad were frugal, so we could do great things like that. And then, yeah, I ended up moving out pretty young, just conflict, just drugs. My dad was like hardcore health nut, like, couldn't understand why I was kind of breaking out of that. But
you're like in this experimental phase.
Yeah, but also, like, I needed those other role models. I needed someone to guide me. I didn't quite have it. And like, instead of like I learned a lot. Like, I needed my dad to fuck up so I could be better when it happens to my kids. Because so I'm actually super grateful for it, because I don't know whether he'd admit it, but I don't think he dealt with it the best way to keep me sorted.
Gotcha.
But I'm grateful that I crashed and burned, because got to rise back up.
Right. Yeah. So what about school? What kind of student were you?
Look, I was always smart enough to like do nothing and get half decent marks.
I hate you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I hate people like that.
Yeah. Well, but again, it's not great for you, because unfortunately what it's done is, like, I always know I can skate by enough. So there's always like a safety net of like, oh, I'm always going to be okay. And that's actually, you got to make yourself hungry and scared to have impetus to do anything, you know what I mean? So I always kind of went okay, and then I just wagged heaps of school. Like, I used to sneak out every night with my boy, the same one who threw me down the creek all the time. We just used to go out and smoke weed and like just vandalize and just do all crazy stuff and all that and worse. So like, school, I was always not, you know, I got politely asked to leave Fig Tree High. Got into, was accepted into Smith Hill up here.
Selective academic school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They,
no way.
They let me in. That's there, and good. Then, and they politely asked me to leave about a year and a half later. So I actually finished my schooling at TAFE. Yeah. Finished my year 12 at TAFE. I dropped out and went back the next year and sort of just kind of taught myself from whatever like HSC books you could have. Had a couple of good teachers who actually, like mostly not good teachers, but one, I think her name was Loretta. I wish I could find her because I want to find her and just like say, you changed my life. Because she was like, go for this scholarship. She knew I was like out of home, like, you know, used to be fucked up, but trying to sort my life out. And she's like, go for this scholarship. And I got a few extra points and got into like arts law double degree. Pissed Laura off after a little while, but I got that's like she looked at me and said, like, you got this, you know.
Was she like a careers advisor?
Nah, she was an English teacher.
No way.
She's like, you're smart, dude. See, like, you're not, like, she didn't say it, but I got the vibe. She was like, you're one that can make it, dude. No, you're one of these dudes who can make it. Some people come through here and they're just like trying to get through, like. Go for this scholarship. And I wish I could find her because I'd give her flowers and I'd tell her, like, yeah, she made a big difference in my life. So, yeah, and then went to uni.
Isn't it funny? Like, I hear it time and time again. It's just that one person sometimes that you just needed to hear those words from, that they actually believe in you.
Right. It's like it's just serendipity, man. It happens all at some things you could hear it one day wouldn't mean shit.
Exactly.
You know, like my handle now, is like, these are the days that you must. I actually think that I gave creative license to that, but it was a jiu-jitsu teacher, my first one. I was like having a heap of shit day and I didn't want to keep going.
Mm.
And he's like, what, you're going to go home? And I was like, nah, I don't know, man. I'm just not feeling it today. I just suck today. And he's like, these are the days that you must. And I was like,
so true.
It was the fucking Rocky movie, man. I was like, Rocky Six. It was like the Rocky Six movie, man. And I was like, you know what? And ever since then, every time I go, oh, I don't feel like it, I'm like, well, these are the days that you must.
Yes.
And I just keep going.
Not often hear people reference Rocky Six, like Rocky Four.
That's not from Rocky Six. Oh. No. That was him. I think that's what he said. That's how I remember it. And that's now become the thing that I always say to myself, these are the days that you must. But it's very Rocky Six like. It's very Rocky Six like for sure.
Dude, see, I always reference Rocky Four, you know. I was always so inspired by, you know, going up against Ivan Drago.
Yeah.
He had the good training facility.
Yeah.
Rocky was training in the snow.
Hey, dude, just on a side note, like my side hustle, I actually do VO2 max testing.
Dude.
So, and I always explain that to people, like, you know, Rocky IV, yeah. Ivan Drago, he's got the huge fucking thing coming out of his mouth. I'm like, yeah, that's what it is. And only people who have seen Rocky IV, everyone else is like,
oh, that's Drago. A VO2 max test.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was just a prop to make him look like,
Well, he probably wasn't actually doing it, but that's what they would have been doing, yeah.
So cool. Actually, now I think about it, I did see Rocky VI at the movies because, like, Rocky was huge in our family.
Mm.
Like, my dad left us when we were, I don't know, I was like 12. But it was the one thing we always had together. We had two things, and it was like rugby league, like watching it. He was like Parramatta Eels fanatic. Still is. And took me to the first ever Parramatta Eels game at when Parramatta Stadium was first built.
Yeah.
They show him age a little bit. And the other thing we had together was the Rocky movies, you know, just like watching Rocky 1, 2, 3. And I think got up to 4. I don't think I watched 5 with him, but it was like, yeah.
5 just, sucked, man.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, skip that. 6 or 6. Get on the train.
Yeah, because it's his son too, you know. He's helping his son. Oh, no. He had a fight, but his son was – he was having issues with his son.
Yeah.
So it gets us dudes
there. Yeah. Oh, man.
Why do you reckon a lot of dudes have issues with their dad?
Man, I've resolved my issues with my dad, but I had some big ones, man. And I think most dudes haven't because they haven't resolved them. Like, it's very – like, coming back to that whole feminizing thing, right? Like, it's hard to use certain language without people having different connotations. But, I think there's so much power in those kind of traditional feminine ideas of vulnerability and like and that's exactly what men should be doing as well. You know, we should be able to hold both of those spaces. And I think men, like, well, I'm certain that men don't, you know. And unless you do, unless you sit there and you're really honest with how you're feeling and you do a lot of times the really hard stuff and sit with your dad or sit with your parents and be like, this is fucking how I feel. And
is that, like, how you resolve it?
Yeah, in the end, yeah.
Like a big conversation.
Got a couple, but like some real big conversations within the family. We had some we had some pretty big things go down, and particularly that like had hurt me for very many years. Really, really painful. Would have affected my sleep for a really long time. And I felt they should have. I felt my parents should have resolved it. You know, that they should have come to my rescue and they should have sorted it out, and I fucking stewed on it for so long. You know, it's involving kind of other family members as well. And I just came to realize as I was doing it, and definitely after, like, there's no fucking playbook for some of this stuff. You know what I mean? And like they didn't know how to deal with it. And I think they could have dealt with things a lot better. But I certainly know how I'm going to deal with it. And again, like I said that before, I think the failures of your parents are sometimes the biggest gifts. Like my parents have predominantly had successes, I would say, as parents. I think they're amazing parents, and I think like their failures have taught me the most. I know exactly how I'd be in certain situations now, and already have been. So I think it's about sometimes helping yourself. And if you feel fucking shit about something, stop waiting for someone to apologize to you or fucking for daddy to save you or mum to save you, and just realize that they're fucking humans and
take ownership of your own life.
Yeah. And just like walk up and say, this is how I feel. And you might actually get a perspective from them that you never fucking thought of, and you'd created this massive story in your head.
I know I do it personally. I can't speak for everyone, but I see a lot of other people do it. They fall into that victim mentality. And I think it's very easy to blame our parents for our problems. And, yeah. You know, because I think so much happens in those early years of life, you know, and a lot of trauma or even perceived trauma, you know. And then I know I did it for years. I used it.
This is why I'm fucked up.
I did that because of my childhood, and that's why I'm acting out. Yeah. And that's why I'm behaving this way, because if I had a fucked up childhood and it wasn't because of me, you know, and really that's just a real bullshit narrative. It wasn't until I actually stopped and took ownership and said, well, you know, like it's my behavior. I'm the only one that can control that. Yeah. I can't stop blaming other people. And I don't know. I see it in society a lot, but just we like to blame other people and deflect away. And I think it could really resolve a lot of problems, you know. But also, sorry to cut you off there, but going back to what you said about, you know, like, you know, resolution, like people avoid that. It's difficult. It's uncomfortable. It's ugly. It's not black and white. And you've got to have those courageous conversations. But I think over time, it's so worth it. And especially as I'm getting a little bit older, I see the benefit of it. In terms of breaking those patterns,
it's something I always say to people: with everything in life is reps. Like the first time you do it, it'll be harder, but everything is reps. Like the more you do it, the better you'll get at it, and the easier it'll be. Like hard conversations are one of those things. It's like fucking reps, man. Every time you need to have a hard conversation, you just fuck, and then you pick up the phone, you have it, or you go and see him, and you have the conversation, and you usually feel heaps better after, and you wonder why you didn't do it. It is the same thing with a workout or with anything difficult. It's just it's reps. Just do the thing, and you'll get better at it.
Yeah.
I think there's a real shitty byproduct of giving a fuck about the world, which is what you were talking about before. It kind of promotes this victim mentality. I've worked in the kind of charity space forever, and I think like it promotes this welfare mentality. It promotes this victim mentality. I was blessed with a great life despite, you know, whatever shit went on. And yet I saw myself until I was 30 years old as a victim. Everything was like, oh, fuck, I'm fine. My back's fucked, so I can't do this. This happened to me when I was young. So this, like, I would find whatever reason instead of just being like, let's speak into power kind of thing. So
speak into power. I like that.
What we do in PNG and on the post-conflict side, so like I told you all the child protection stuff, but over in Bougainville is like there was a civil war there. It was called the Jewel of the Pacific. Amazing place. Everyone used to rave about it, right? It had it had like everything for the time in history. And then there was this fight over land rights and the whole place got burned to the fucking ground. And all of now, the result of that was 10 years of conflict, 10 years of not having school, 10 years of people dying, 10 years of no church, like complete disintegration of their culture. And then everything was burnt to shit. And what the result of that was something they call the Lost Generation. And so the Lost Generation, if you go into most, they still call them the youth because they didn't get their youth, but they're like up to 40 years old. Sort of, they call their youth like 18 to 35, 18 to 40. And if you go around, it's like pretty much 100% unemployment. They walk around, they just get pissed all the time. They seem lost. So they're called the Lost Generation.
Completely uneducated.
A lot of them uneducated, or a lot of them started their education. We had staff members that started kindergarten when they were 13, 14. Yeah, who are now awesome. So you had this thing, and what we kept noticing, we're going out. It's actually where my co-founder was born, where she's from. I was like sitting there one day and talking to a guy. One of the like community development guys said, "Yeah, I don't like this this term we use, Lost Generation." I was like, it just fucking clicked, and I was like, "Yeah, everyone keeps telling these kids they're lost, or these people, of course." All of the older generation remembers the good times. They call it the good times, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we're so – like basically we're so sorry. We pity you because we had all the good times and all got fucked up. And then like look at you guys now. And that is the identity they've taken on themselves. So we started a program called Generation Found, and we said everywhere we went to consult, we're like, we want to turn this shit on its head because we keep telling them they're lost. And everyone, like all of the elders, they love the next generation. They want to help them. And it resonated with all of them. And we talked about wanting to regenerate culture, like pull back some stuff, like bring some pride back. You need to create to help people not feel lost. You need to create an idea of a future for them. You need to acknowledge there's a difference between pretending shit doesn't exist and rising up in spite of it. So it's like, so what we say is, right, no one is pretending that the conflict didn't happen here. It's fucked up. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to live like that? Is that your identity now? Or are you going to say, despite all of this, we're back from the ashes. We're going to rebuild this place and we're going to kick ass. And we had like, man, we had people walking 5 hours from the mountains down to do our weekly program and 5 hours back. Just mental shit, man. Like in the jungle, like just
no complaints.
Oh no. Just because they want to be educated. They like someone's finally telling them they can do shit. We had people starting trout farms, peanut farms, like piggeries. We had people starting like collectives to help widows in their community for like, free, just cleaning shit up. Just
like war widows?
Yeah. Just any widows from the conflict or you know, because there was a part of their work that wasn't getting done. Just beautiful shit. And it all came from just telling them that they could be something. And it's like it's the same mentality here. It's like there's what a lot of progressives don't understand. I consider myself a leftist, but now in this modern world that we live in, it's like you keep telling people that, you know, you're oppressed because you're this, and this. What the like that you're creating an identity for them. Don't like, yeah, have an identity, whatever. Identify with whatever. But if you're identifying with it, you know, to have layers of oppression, despite the fact that there might be some historical or structural truth to that, like, what? How is that serving you? Like, that's the biggest question. How does that serve you? And how does the narrative of people who are supposedly in that system better off, you know, how does them screaming that from the rooftops fucking help you anyway?
Yeah.
I just, and this has been something I've seen forever. Like 10 years ago, we had the UOW Women's Society say that they wouldn't do they wouldn't do one of our fundraisers to stop violence against women because it was called Ladies on the Lawn.
Why?
Why? Because apparently it reinforced structural ideas of you know, the patriarchy, right? And I was like, okay, cool conversation. We can have that conversation. And there might be some truth in those ideas, but how does it serve you wanting to help women to say that we are not going to join forces with these guys who are trying to promote anti-violence, you know?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got more of a solution-based approach.
Yeah.
You know, no, and I remember one of my mentors, because I'm a teacher, he was a leader of a school, and I was always had so much respect for him, and I used to go to him like, oh, this is happening and this is happening, like, how are you going to fix it? And he'd always say to me, like, before you come in here, there's no problems, just solutions. Yeah. So don't come in here with a problem.
Yeah.
If you do, come with a solution.
Yeah.
And it fucking changed everything. Like I do now. I don't see problems. I just see solutions. Like, yeah. There's problems, but there's always a solution. So, yeah. Okay, which way do we go? Like, let's get the emotion out of it now. How are we going to move forward? And so this is exactly what you're saying. I love that.
And that's like the innovation mindset as well.
Is it?
That's what it is. It's like, the greatest products ever, whether they're social products or products, are always been or largely been, you know, addressing an issue, come out with a solution, not just identifying a problem. It's like, well, yeah. Fuck, I'm going to solve this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. Oh man, I love it. And I'm just really like I feel really inspired now. I actually want to go to Papua New Guinea and just
Yeah, cool.
Just feel
I'll set
that,
you up, bro.
Well, I want to feel the rawness. I think like you were saying how like there's all these people who are now being given opportunities and they're just jumping all over it and they're walking 5Ks a day or whatever. Yeah. I remember I did a charity walk in Nepal with the Himalayan Education Charity Foundation and we hiked to base camp.
Yeah.
But we took our time doing it. Along the way, we stopped at every school and we donated backpacks and books and yeah. stuff like that. And it took us like usually you can walk to base camp from Lukla in, I don't know, 6 or 7 days, but we took 18 days and got to know the locals. And these kids were walking in the Himalayas, like yeah. some of these younger kids were walking like 5 to 10 Ks a day barefoot
yeah.
through the mountains, you know, on these tracks just to go to school every day and yeah. then walk back because they didn't have shoes. You know, sub-zero temperatures, not a complaint in the world.
Yeah. yeah.
And it's like I just feel like sometimes like we just need to keep reminding ourselves like in our society when we have problems, you know, let's really step back and have a look at our problems. And they're actually quite good problems, like, you know, compared. We've got to keep reminding ourselves of that. And it's not to say that we need to feel guilty about the luxuries that we enjoy, but we just need to put things in perspective, eh?
It's certainly, you're certainly reminded of it when you're there. Yeah. There was heaps of kids. Like I said, they were adults walking sort of, yeah, 10 hours in a day just to see us, five and five back. But then there was heaps of kids going 2.5, 3 hours one way just to get to school in different parts. Yeah, like little kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they got a bike, they'd be stoked, but some of them had to walk. Like, yeah.
Like, what's the general – okay, I know Port Moresby sounds really full on. I've heard that's a gnarly city.
Yeah.
But like – what's the general vibe amongst the people aside from some of the social problems? I mean, are they generally happy people? Are they
I love family, joyous? I love Papua New Guinea, man. Yeah. I do. It's like it's a tough kind of – it's family, you know. It's like one of those things where, you know, family's fucking hard sometimes and just like, oh, fuck, I'm going to go. Like, but like
– well, you feel at peace there personally?
It's my – I mean, I haven't been since March, which is crazy because I've probably had like 100 trips. Like yeah. so many trips. Always had the kids here, so I couldn't and separated family, so I couldn't ever have the kids over there. So I come back and forth. Like I did 10 trips last year, was over there for like 4 months of the year, and then I do the rest kind of working from a desk here and setting up the Australian office now. It's a place below me, you know? It's like one of my homes.
Nice, bro.
Yeah, I have so many good friends. My co-founder Jackie is like has our relationship's grown massively. She's like my sister. She's just like we're so different. She's so super religious but she just has the purest heart of anyone you could imagine. She's so dedicated. She's up doing Bible study every morning. She is like, you know, Bible study, prayer, like getting work done, just doesn't stop. She's relentless. She's a like future fucking prime minister, man. I can't wait.
Wow.
Yeah, I have so much belief in her. She's an amazing human, and yeah, I've been blessed to do it with her.
That's such a commonality with great people. They have a real deep sense of spirituality.
Mm.
It is. If you go back through the history of time and look at all the greats,
yeah,
all the game changers,
yeah.
They're all either deeply spiritual, deeply religious. I mean, if they use religion as their portal to spirituality, whatever. Yeah. It's, yeah, you can't deny it, you know. You really can't. Just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, no, I think it helps to feel as if there's a higher power that's like supporting you in your corner. You know what I mean?
It's do like you have a higher power?
Yeah, I do. There's just a bit of more nuanced, I guess. Like, it's a little bit more, you know, New Age and Western probably. It's like the collective consciousness of the world, and yeah, it's like Mother Nature and feeling the kind of hum of the universe and knowing that when I'm taking care of myself and when I'm listening, like you can. Like you do speak to something. I spoke to God once. He spoke to me.
Okay.
It was a man.
Tell me how that. Do you mind telling us that story?
Yeah. I tell this story. I tell this story sometimes because it makes me sound crazy. But I woke up. I was woken up. I had this idea that I was thinking about, like, you know, Jordan Peterson talks about this and other people talk about this a fair bit, this idea of that we've lost church and church, losing church is much more than a connection to God. It's losing community, and we don't do that anymore. We don't come together. We don't have a place where we talk about our shit. And I was just talking, like, I kept friends and like best mates, brother, and just like people I grew up with killing themselves. I was just like, I just weighing on my head, and I was like, there needs to be some kind of like church. And I was in Papua New Guinea completely sober. Like, I was woken up in the morning by this booming voice. And I was like, Adam, you need to start your church. Like this, it's like a proper Aussie. Just like, not even, there's no like, it was just like, dude, wake up. You need to start your church. You need to start, like, booming, like, woke up. And I was like, what the, like, that was, it was mental. I told my co-founder, she's like, yeah, God's speaking to you. And I was like, to me, that's my conscience speaking to me, but it's coming through in a real powerful way. And maybe it is that idea of God or collective consciousness being like, this is something that you need to be doing. There's a path here for you to explore. And that's part of your journey of helping people. And, yes. And like, I'm telling you really loud and clear, whether that's this like internal drive that's connected to that, whatever it is. I don't know what it is, and I don't pretend to know, but it was hugely powerful. I was like, wow, what was that? I messaged my best mate, and I said, hey, dude. I was like, hey, dude, I just spoke to God, and I'm going to start a church. And he just sent back this thing. He's like, I'm in.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's a best mate.
He probably thought I was high, but
so he's in to get high, not.
But no, he was cool. He was like, "Yeah, man, I'm in for sure," which is awesome.
Yeah, dude, that's and a great story.
He came to the first version of it actually just a couple of Sundays ago. We did like a men's health, like.
So it's actually running right now.
Well, the first iteration of it took me a year and a half, dude, to finally do it, man. I, for whatever reason,
you're
like
a doer.
Just shit scared of doing stuff in Australia. Like,
why? I can't believe you said that. Why? Yeah. Why? I reckon it goes back to Tall Poppy.
Yeah, there is that, but like,
we're so judgmental, bro.
There's so much pain that goes with starting something new, man. And like the shit that we did in PNG and the amount of years of pain that was, it's like I remember it all. It's all trauma. And it's like, I don't want to be a, I was telling my daughter this morning, we're doing like a journal. We've got like this big life journal. I don't know if you've ever seen the ads for them. They're really cool. And she had to ask me what's something that was really hard that I had to get through. And I was like, well, when you were really young, I quit my job and I was like, I'm going to put everything into this organization. I wasn't getting paid. And because I know we kept getting these signals that we're gonna get some funding, and I went 4 months unemployed, eating cans of tuna and rice, like spending all my savings, and then everyone's saying you need to give it up, you need to get a job, you need to do all this, and like I kept saying just one more, and really when it felt like the time that it was coming, when I needed to give up, we hit our big break. Like yes. went from basically zero to like, it was like $1 million Australian in funding was our first kind of big whack. And we were doing like maybe 50 grand a year in something. So we got an office, we got a van, we got all this shit. And I was like, everyone told me not to, but all of that, like that was painful. So hugely painful. Like my parents were helping me out with rent. Like it was all sorts of shit. One of the best times of my life, but also
entrepreneurs,
tough.
Man, entrepreneurs, dude.
Yeah.
They all go through the exact same thing.
So that's kind of, I think that was a bit of that, but also Australia's just tough and like there's a lot of people in the game, and like when you start in something new again, it's like, it's almost like PNG, they're so thirsty for new things. You got a bit more leeway here. It's like, oh, we've seen all this before. What do you got? You know, like you got something good for us. That's how my head goes. But truth be told, like the men that we worked with the other day were all kind of really lovely and it's really good for the space. That's what I want to do as part of Equal Playing for Australia. A bit of a different focus. It'll be a lot around men's health and mental health and actual social media delay for kids.
Social media delay, as in like how to manage usage, Ollie?
How to create communities where parents all agree to not let their kids use social media until they're older. Yeah. Preach, right?
Yeah. Dude, see, yeah.
So
they're
the two main things that we're looking at here, because it's just about – I think that like it goes back to why I went to PNG. You need to actually find where you're going to be the most use. Like there's no point. Again, it's like so many of these things get – there's a million people trying to do shit. There's like a founder syndrome in Australia. Like everyone wants an organization to do this and that and that. Like you actually need to find a problem that's not being solved. And then you need to create a solution around that. If you're not doing that, then you're just having a wank and you're trying to build yourself up as a hero. And that's where you've got to consciously and continuously check your ego. Why am I doing what I'm doing? And not a lot of people do that.
I've never heard that term founder syndrome before.
Oh man, it is rampant in Australia for sure. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people come and go.
Yeah, really.
Oh, it's in my head because I've been involved in different kind of circles where like social entrepreneurship and kind of charity work has been a thing. Yeah,
right. Oh, that's so interesting.
We've got like probably per capita like the most like charities in the world. I'm throwing that out there, but I think it's
yeah, we do, don't we?
We have heaps. Yeah,
I mean, I think Australians are very charitable. It always never ceases to amaze me when there is a good cause. People, oh man, people can't wait to support it. You know, but I guess I've never actually stood back and went, oh yeah, we do have a lot of people starting charities. You know?
The thing is, like,
I mean, is it a bad thing?
Well, here's the thing: is it a bad thing,
or are non-for-profits a bad thing? Because you know what I mean. Because yeah, they're non-for-profit, but that person is still gaining an income from it to keep it going, right?
Yeah.
So they're creating. They're ultimately trying to create a lifestyle by design for themselves.
So when we
with a good cause, I'm not to say
no. It's these are very important topics. My global change makers where I met my co-founder, I go back sometimes and I facilitate for like the new crop. My message constantly, the biggest thing that I always say every time they give me a mic or give me a workshop or whatever it is always, you will start to do good things as a young person, you'll pick your lane or whatever, and people will tell you you're great. You must not become addicted to that. You must think about why you got in it, what you're trying to change, and you must question the impact that you're making and really rigorously look at it. So what happens is you can create vanity metrics to make what you're doing look really good. Oh, this many percentage of did it. Like I learned that because I could see the back end of shit and I could see, I saw how I could manipulate. It's like the fucking ring, man, in Lord of the Rings, dude. It's like, I have all the power here to change all this. No one would fucking know. No one would know because there's no funders going into the back door and saying, oh, can we have the paper versions of these things you put in Excel? No one's doing that.
Mm.
And I knew from little things that I would hear and see, and I can tell you it happens at the highest levels and it would make you sick, the amount that people manipulate data that comes in to make what are failures look like successes, and that is a huge problem in development. So that's at the kind of the macro sort of organizational level, and to be honest, that's at the federal level of politics.
I was gonna say, that's a full-time job in the corporate world.
Yeah,
like manipulation, not manipulation of data, presentation of 100%. Data.
Yeah, optics, man.
Yeah,
I learned that optics. I learned that term. Optics from someone working at the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.
So data driven too.
It's look, but you can make data work whatever you, in whatever way you like. So my message is always, you got to choose who you're going to be.
Yeah,
and you can really, like, we had some evidence early on that our shit wasn't really working, and I was like, fuck, man. And I was like, I had a couple of options. Like, I could have cherry picked information and kept going, but what I did was I got in contact with a research partner with a university, and I said, here's the tool that we're using. This is what we're getting back. Can you tell me, is it the tool, or are we just fucking up here? And they were like, yeah, you're asking the questions wrong. Like, they pulled it apart. And so after that, went back, we got more of what we were seeing,
right,
but that wasn't represented. Right. And then I had full confidence in what I was doing, not always thinking I had some kind of shonky thing going on. So, like, for us, like, true monitoring evaluation, I said it to you in there in terms of, like that was my bio, except for the last part. I said something about charismatic, which was, did you make that up? Or
I did.
Oh, you made that
up. Is that all right?
Oh, yeah, that's cool. I was like, I didn't write that. I wouldn't have called myself charismatic.
I think you are.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. But like we always push this. I believe this personally, but as an organization, like, be authentic in what you present. Don't say you worked with fucking 200,000 people if those people just kind of walked into an event you had. No. We want true impact.
And here's my unqualified theory.
Yeah.
People can sniff out authenticity a mile away.
Yeah.
They can sniff out bullshit a mile away too.
Yeah.
Data, whatever. But
yeah.
I don't know.
I think you are half right.
Half right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, because they can. So I imagine that people can sense my authenticity now when you talk to someone. So I believe that, right? If you had someone on here talking and they weren't authentic, I think they could work it out. But we're such a vanity metric society now. If you look, fuck, that's what Instagram is, man.
It is.
You know, it's like, here's this flashy shit. That looks good. You can have my money because that makes sense.
Mm.
Not like I've got to have a real nuanced conversation with people to talk to them about, like, why it's impactful to spend money now to be a small part of the solution to help people being violent in fucking 15 years. Like, that's a difficult conversation to have. It's a lot easier to say, like, this is the thing and this is, you give that and
hard
we
sell.
Have this. Yeah. Yeah.
Dude. Never thought of it like that, man. I really haven't. Like, I don't really have a great business mind, I don't think. Not to say you're talking business, but you are as well. But the whole vanity metric, I mean, it is so potent. It's addictive. I mean, I'm suffering from it as well. Definitely, you know. And you get a few compliments, and you get a few people on board, and it's like, yes, it's the ego is so powerful, and it's always underlying, and your motives can be as good as they can be so solid.
Yeah.
But mate, the ego can be all powerful.
I think that after a while, though, in terms of, like, I think in some ways I have a business mind, in other ways not at all. But I really think that we used to get a little bit upset at like jealous when we would see other organizations that we knew that weren't as solid as us getting a bit of love here, a bit of love there. And then now what we've noticed after like nearly 10 years is actually, we had massive integrity. Me and Jackie always spoke about that being important. It's a value that we shared. It was really important. We would always do shit the right way. We wouldn't inflate our numbers. We'd never do shit like that. and that it would work out in the end. And so I think long term, that's the strategy. Short term gains is all that vanity metric shit. Yeah, this is what we're doing. This is it. You build a house of cards like that, and then it'll come out down
there's
the
no
line.
There's no longevity.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, okay, let's say you're, do you ever have like sense of embarrassment or shame when like when you were starting out and presenting low numbers or not success and you're trying to like, you know, get people on board? Was there a sense of like, I guess, okay, I'll relate it to me. Like I often have people say to me, oh, how many podcast listens do you get? How many listens do you get? You know? And like, I'm super, I mean, it's, I get really insecure about it. Like, I don't want to share it. I'm definitely going to share it now either. Yeah. And I feel like embarrassed, like, oh, I did, maybe not so much now, but when I was first starting out, it's like, oh, I'm embarrassed to say exactly, you know, and I'd be really shy about it. And I'm like, oh, like they must think I'm doing all this work and it's for nothing. You know, do you ever have those feelings?
I think you should say it, bro. They might feel really good that they're one of the.
Oh, well, for me, it's not about the number. Well, yeah. If I'm honest, I've thought a lot about it now, and it's not about the numbers at all. Okay, it's really not. Like for me, it's about exactly what's happening right now, having this quality conversation. Yeah. But also, if there's one thing that's unique that you've said that it hits one person, well, then I'm satisfied. I'm happy.
That is my.
Is that too idealistic?
Nah, man. Look, this year, just to take a sidetrack, I was seeing a girl, and one thing I found really beautiful about her is she was doing this thing called One Take Tuesday. Shout out to Chanel. We were just chatting before, actually. And she was like, I used to love singing and playing, and like, so now I'm just like, one take every Tuesday, I'm going to sing a song. And I was like, I saw her. I was like, fuck. Yeah. That's brave, man. And I used to play music all the time with my guitar and sing, and I loved it, and it gave me a lot of joy. But I got so a few things that were said to me. I got so nervous about doing it in front of people, and I had to be alone. And it's a part that I kind of pushed away for like 10 years. And like, she kind of gave me the courage, and I started playing in front of her a little bit, and then I started putting it out there. And I just I kept reminding myself. I was like, I put these out. It doesn't matter how many people view it. It's just got to touch one person, and actually that one person is me. Yes. So if it serves me, then it's art that I want to make. And if it serves others, then that's a bonus. And if you can keep reminding yourself of that, then it doesn't matter how many fucking people listen or whatever. But still, you get it caught in the traps of like, as soon as someone does like it, you're like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm doing it right now. Like I had a moment with a guest a few episodes ago. She had 100, she's got 100,000+ followers on Instagram. And then she's like, oh, like, oh, I want to follow you on Instagram. What's your Instagram? And I honestly had that moment of like, oh, like, I don't want her to see my Instagram. I was embarrassed. Like, I didn't even have 2%, not even 2% of that, you know? Yeah. And then I just stood back and go, what the fuck are you going on about? Like, you really care? Like, you're going to measure yourself against a few numbers on fucking Instagram, you know? Yeah, and then I was just like, it made me step back again and go, okay, why did I start this? And, you know, you used a term earlier, like you had this moment, God spoke to you. I think that term confuses people, like God spoke to me. Like I think we often expect this big resounding voice to come from the sky and hit us in the head and go, oh, you know. But I've had it a couple of times in my life. Actually, and starting the podcast, to be honest, was one of the times. Mm. But it wasn't a voice in the head, although that actually was a voice in the head. I was on a motorbike in Denpasar in Bali in 8 deep traffic, and it just hit me like, and it was a voice. That was that one time. It happened another time. But I think I'm going on a tangent here. Excuse me.
I love tangents.
Thanks. But for me, it's this intuitive sense that I think as I'm getting older, I've really tapped into. And it's also been a byproduct of me, you know, choosing to live a life of sobriety, okay, without alcohol. And it's like I feel like I'm starting to tune into that intuitive sense, and alcohol was actually numbing it for me for many, many years. But now it's like I stop and I pause and I go, okay, like why am I doing this, or what's the I've got a big decision to make. And I think going back to the whole vanity metric thing, it's I had to stop the other day just recently and go, okay, well, why am I doing this? It's like, yeah, well, because – everyone's story is unique, and there's someone out there who needs to hear it exactly like it happened for you. Your story could be identical to someone else's, but the way it happened to you might have these slight intricacies of difference. And that's why we do it. And I think over time, in my opinion, success is a byproduct of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for letting me go on.
Nah, man, I love attention.
Thanks for listening, bro.
I think you touched on what we said before. It's like sometimes, like, just one person can say one thing.
Right, exactly, you know? Bro.
So, like, if one person hears that one thing,
when they needed to hear it, at the time they needed to hear it.
Yeah, just because everything's kind of crystallizing, they don't know it yet. There's one piece of the puzzle that needs to drop, and then they go, "Oh, motherfucker!" Right there. That's the thing.
I read something the other day that hurt me. It was like a meme, and it was like this girl's meme. And Kelly Slater actually reshared it on his Instagram, and it just fucking hurt me. I don't know why.
It's like every cunt has a podcast.
No, yeah, she wrote, "Why do middle-aged men, like, instead of going to therapy, why do they start podcasts?" And I went, "Oh, fuck, god damn it, that's me. Fuck.
Because this is your therapy, bro. It's good. Fucking embrace it."
And I'm like, why did that hurt me? And I'm like, because I never thought, not to say I feel like I need therapy. I mean, but if I'm honest, like, this is therapy. Like, I get to speak to such a rad dude like you, who's passionate, inspired, charismatic, has a rad story, done the hard yards. And, like, already I'm sitting here and I'm just like, identify, you know, hard childhood, problems with dad, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what's firing back at me is like healing. Like, every time you say that, and it's like, the more honest and the more raw you are, the more healed I become. And I fucking hope someone else is getting that healing, you know? I don't know.
I think that
should I quit the podcast and go and get therapy?
Absolutely, mate. Get the fuck out. No. I think that girl, right?
Bum, yeah.
Was it a girl that shared
it? It was actually a female that shared it.
So I think this is what the equivalent is like someone who's overweight being like, "Oh, like, look at all these dickheads, you know, eating healthy or whatever." It's like people who want to be something else are just sitting there saying something into the mirror. They don't really love something about themselves, so they put it out there like, "Oh, fuck these guys," because really they want a place where they can talk to great people. They can, you know, they want that for themselves. That's all that shit is. And it doesn't matter if you can sit there and rationalize that and, like, know that to be true. Still fucking hurts. Still fucking hurts. It's like you hit a chord but then, like, you just flip it, man. Just be like, "Yeah, this is great therapy. Thanks."
Yeah, thanks, man. I think I did. And also, like, I'm really now, when something does hurt me, like, I can just shrug it off and go, whatever, fuck, that doesn't hurt me. But now I go, okay, well, why is that a sore spot, you know?
Yeah.
And it usually taps into something deeper. And I think for me, most things that are sore spots are stripped back to two things, and it's fear of something, whether it's fear of judgment, ridicule, rejection, or it taps into fear of insecurity, like, I'm going to go without, people aren't going to like me, I'm going to lose friends over this. So it's all, actually, you know what?
It's all fear.
I think it's all fear.
Yeah.
It's all fear.
Yeah. I don't do things out of fear constantly.
Is that your mantra?
that's the anti-mantra. It's like
don't do things out of fear.
No, I'm saying that's what prevents me from doing things that I should be doing. So there's a lot of things that I want to do.
But fear stops me.
Yeah, 100%. I'm always like, it's the same shit as you're talking about, man. It's like starting the Aussie office. I'm like, "Oh, cool. So I've got to start socials now with zero. Right, cool. I've got to build it up from nothing. No one knows who we are. I've got to have these conversations and they've got to think that I'm just another person trying to do this, you know." Like, they don't know who the fuck I am. They don't know what I've done, and none of it matters. So I have to have these uncomfortable conversations all the time. Starting a business, it's like I've taken so long to do it because I'm like, who the fuck's going to listen to me? You know, I've worked with thousands and thousands of men. Yeah, I'm like, "Oh, okay, this is a new men to work with here," and, like, completely go back to being a beginner and just not, I can't do it, put it off, I kept putting it off. Mm. So I act in that way all the time. I just always fuck myself over, like, in a good way. So my when I feel myself doing that after a while, I go like, "Oh, I'm just going to pay for rent on an office." And then you got to do it.
My friend Blake Johnson said that. He's been on the podcast. He opened up a couple of cafes in Bali, but he had a cafe in Wollongong.
Blakey, you fucking listening to me?
You know Blakey, you know, of course Blakey.
Are you watching the live stream?
He listens, you know. I know he's undercover listener.
Yeah, cool.
He's been on twice actually.
Love Blakey, he's a fucking good human.
But he said it to me once. He said, like, he sold his business here and he's like, I'm gonna go and open restaurants in Bali. And he said what he deliberately did was he told a lot of people he's going to do it, because then he was like, oh, fuck, well, I have to do it now just to save face. But when I was telling people, he goes, I had nothing set up. You know, I had no contacts. I didn't know how I was going to start it.
Yeah.
But I just told people, well, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And then sort of made out like it was already started and that's it wasn't. It. And he goes, and then I was like, oh, fuck, well, I've really committed to my friendship circle and people that know me. If I don't do it, I'm going to be something. And so he was actually running off this fear of embarrassment. You know? Or no, not fear, but he made himself accountable.
Fuck yeah. That's the move all the time.
Is a good move?
That's my only move, basically. That's it. It's like I'm doing it. I just told everyone I'm running 100 miles. It's like I'm fucking running 100
Did
miles.
You?
Yeah.
When?
No, I just told everyone I'm going to do it.
Have you done it?
No, I'll do it in 3 months.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Have you started training?
Yeah, well, I did the 100.
100 kilometers.
That was the Kokoda one.
That was recent?
Yeah, that was a couple of months ago, but I fucked my knee. So I haven't been able to run. I've been like slowly training my way through a ton of pain to try and get back to. So I've just got back to 10 kilometers and that's a really painful 10 kilometers. But so I've got to get 160 by in about 3 months.
Are you kidding?
Yeah,
my brother's an ultra runner in Adelaide, actually. But I think he failed his first two or three 100s.
Yeah,
the first one he got to 60k, and the chafing got so bad he couldn't go. The chafing on Chase's his like fucking chafing real, was just he said I couldn't do anything about it. There wasn't enough Vaseline in the world or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's brutal. Chafing's. So why are you doing that stuff?
It's just a metaphor for life, man.
Is it?
Yeah, man, for
what?
Sure.
Get on board.
I just tell everyone. No, the Kokoda was. So the Kokoda in a day one.
Well, for those that aren't unaware, can you explain?
Yeah, so
explain
that was, we got defunded a bunch of money. $500,000 was pulled out of our funding. And then some more funding that we thought we had in line for Bougainville. So separate pool of funding dried up. They had a referendum to decide whether they're going to go for independence, which they got. Holler at my awesome peeps in Bougainville, the newest country in the world. They're going to be independent, which is awesome. But like we're just looking at all the great stuff that we're doing in Bougainville. I was just sharing it before, and we don't have any money right there, so our stuff is discontinued. We've still got an officer that we're paying and trying desperately to raise money to make that happen. But I said to myself, like, man, we can't, like, we're legit a family that has always been about doing the best we can for Papua New Guinea. So we're not like a normal organization that goes like, oh, this isn't making enough money. It's like, fuck, we'll just keep funneling money in there. We'll just use our savings, right? So we realized that we didn't have enough money to keep it going. So we fucking started filming me. I lost my mind.
Sorry, dude.
That's all right, bro.
I'm a one-man show, dude.
He's a one-man show. He's just trying to get stories for his Instagram. No, but and then I was like, fuck, what? How can I raise money? You've recorded me the whole time here, but for whatever reason you pulled up your phone, I lost my shit. But
I use it for my questions. I use the notes.
Yeah,
sorry.
Cool.
Sorry, bro.
Nah, you're right, man. That's all good.
I usually try not to. Sorry.
Just don't let it stop you either. Just because
I'm also head of marketing as well.
Are you the – congratulations, man. That's really fucking cool. Did you just get that job?
Well, yeah, you know, I've been in this position for a while.
That's great.
You know, I founded it.
Wow.
The marketing division.
You founded it.
Yeah, I'm a founder.
I'm really impressed by that.
I'm a founder.
Founder of the marketing division.
Yeah, I founded the marketing division, head of social media.
I'm impressed. I'd put that on my Tinder profile for sure.
Do you have a Tinder profile?
I do. Please find the love of my life for you. Oh, it's a painful.
On Tinder?
I got a fiance from Tinder.
Congratulations.
Yeah. No, I had one. She's gone now.
I'm sorry.
But it went. Why would I still be on there?
Does it work?
Oh, look, she was great. She's amazing. Yeah. She was a lovely human. Just didn't work out. Sometimes they don't. But
relationships are hard.
Fuck yeah. Yeah.
I heard Hinge is the go.
Hinge is, you know, Hinge is what. Look, man, I'm so. Dating apps are...
Dude, what's your thoughts on dating apps?
They are the destruction of courtship. They are an evolutionary process that should never have happened. Like, it just, it ruins the... Like, we're not supposed to go, oh, she seems nice, but I'll just check what else has going on. And like, it's just not... I don't think it's natural. And it feeds all my addictive tendencies and does not make me feel good at all. I don't like it yet. I'll go back to it all the time because it's like, that's how you meet women now. But anyway, that's bullshit. Back to what I was saying.
Dude, I think there's a lot of people out there that need to hear that.
All right, fucking bring it on.
So I missed the whole generation.
Dude.
Because I was in a relationship before they even existed.
Well, get on board, man. You should do a whole... We'll do a separate podcast episode about getting you on on them. I had a break recently because it was just like... It's just too much.
I honestly mean it, man. Like, I think a lot of people need to hear it. I had a friend in Bali. I won't mention his name. He knows who he is.
Hey, so. Scott.
I love him. He's in a committed, dedicated relationship now with a girl he met on Tinder.
Right.
And, he said the same thing. He said, he was living in Bali, you know, I mean, Tinder in Bali, it's people are on holidays. He said it became a complete obsession. Like, but to the point where it just consumed so much of his time. Like, he was at work on it.
Yeah.
Constantly communicating.
Yeah. That's it. You're starting like semi relationships with all these different people, and actually, like, it takes a lot of your energy to do that. You got to give a piece of yourself each time, and like, the more that you get invested in someone, you give a lot of yourself. And I think, like, you got to kind of keep that for when it's for when you really need to give it, you know. And I've spent too much time on there just trying to find love, basically, man. You know, like,
so you think, like, when you do come across maybe the right one, you don't have as much to give them because you've already been given.
I think there's a risk of that. See, like, I analyze it all the time. I think, like, I don't think there's any exact right way to do all this, but I think that if you came across someone in a state where you were invested in this one and this one and this one, you would struggle to see it for what it's worth. But in saying that, you know, when I met my last great love, I was seeing a bunch of girls, and I met her and I was like, see you later.
Gotcha.
So, like, I guess, and you fall into that trap though. Like, I was a younger man as well. I think, you know, something happens one way, one time, and then you think, oh, that's how it's got to happen. And I think that's a trap for me personally, because I'm like, oh, if it's not fucking fireworks straight away, well then get out of here.
Mm.
It's not it. But the truth of it's probably that it's probably more healthy to have a slow burn where you grow fondness for someone over time, and it's not just smelling someone's pheromones and you want to have children with them straight away, you know?
But I mean, are they more necessary than ever given COVID times?
Yeah, that's the thing. They're a necessary evil, it seems now, because we've come so far. So you can't put the genie back in the bottle. But like, I've been writing a sitcom, right?
Have you?
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck, dude. Who are you, man?
I've been writing.
Seriously,
I've been writing a sitcom. But basically, it's about part of it's about this guy who gets kind of dumped and he gets himself a bit sexy and he
like George Costanza.
But he's a bit sexier.
Okay.
And then his friends, he's been like yourself, he's been out of the game for a long time, so he didn't know anything about Tinder and stuff. And all his mates are like, they're all married. They're all like, they're all like, man, give this a go, have a crack, we'll live through you kind of thing. And he cleans up, but leaves him feeling pretty empty, you know. And then he meets the love interest at the fruit shop, you know. And it's like kind of that at first sight thing. It's beautiful.
Nice, bro.
And then. He finds out later that he accidentally impregnated all those women that he dated with. It's called Baby Daddy. It's going to be awesome. So the pack of condoms were from before.
So he had a pack of condoms.
But they were from before the relationship that he was actually
hooking up with women on – he was actually having sex.
See, he had this long-term relationship that fell apart.
Yeah, but then he was hooking up with random women.
And then his mates were like, hey – hop on Tinder.
Get on it.
And to make himself feel better because he felt like a piece of shit.
But fell in love.
But shagging all these women, using this pack of condoms that was
Out of date,
but because he had them from before the, you know.
Do you believe in love at first sight?
I do, man. Yes. I'm such a sucker for it.
It's good, man. It's
I,
good.
I like everything I write on guitars, like they're all fucking love songs or heartbreak. Like I'm a sucker for it. I don't know if that's to my detriment, but I don't want to be any different. I just want to believe in that magic. I just love it. Do you think it's good?
Do you think music would exist without heartbreak?
Nah. Yes, it'd be shit, but... it's rage. Rage would give you music.
Rage Against the Machine?
I mean, the feeling of rage. And they would have given you Rage Against the Machine.
No, I think politics and heartbreak are really good for music, right?
Yeah, for sure. But I think heartbreak more than anything.
Definitely.
I think heartbreak has been the source of more art than any other emotion, like for sure.
You mentioned that you're separated.
Yeah.
I mean... And you believe in love at first. You believe in love at first sight.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, is your view of relationships tainted?
No.
After a failed serious relationship,
I think that's another one of those things you reflect on. You make a choice. Like you can leave. I feel like most people leave relationships bitter. I like hold this up as a real success of mine. Like as much as most things, is that. I'm friends with every ex from the first one, from when I was 15 years old, because maybe it ended shit, but like I did the work to remember that like there were some good times and that we're different people now and have worked on myself or whatever it is, and accepted them for their failures and just realized that that's life and that you can fall in and out of love and that's just how it is. And I think if you approach it like that, then there's always hope for the next one because you're like, that was fucking awesome and I learned some shit. And again, it's like one of those things, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. It's, you might learn some shit too late for that to ever repair, but you can use that in the next one and you'll be better.
Okay, so you're choosing to grow from each failed relationship.
I get better every time. The next girl, she's so
I'm
lucky.
Not laughing at you, just the way you said it.
You got a sister? What's going on?
I don't, thank God. But I do have a daughter, and yeah, but she's young. And
she's a bit young for me.
It's one of my fears as a human, you know, being the father of a daughter when she grows up. I don't know why, it's just a primal thing, that protective mechanism's there. But I want to ask you though, like you said you've had a series of failed relationships throughout your life, so have I, you know. I mean, do you think you're learning from each one? What have you learned then in all this time? What are you going to do differently in the next one?
What I'm going to do differently, I don't always, I always probably serve without serving myself. So like I will, and then I'll hold it. Like if you're going to do that, you're not allowed to hold any resentment. Like.
You serve without serving yourself.
So, like, I don't always.
So you put their needs
over mine, which I think actually is an important trait, but you can take it too far. You know, you cannot speak to your needs enough. And then, But to be honest, I think the last one I did do really well. So, just a lot of circumstances that went into that. She's from overseas. And just a lot of you know complications. You know, when you're a dad, there's only certain things that you can do because you can never leave your kids. You know, so you have to make decisions that are not always for love for a partner, and that's hard.
Pragmatic.
Yeah, and your kids have to always come first. So that was the case for that one. So I'd already learned a lot from other relationships before that one, and that relationship wasn't perfect, but it was really beautiful, and it definitely helped me become a better father and a better man. But I'm just a lot better at. I learned that I needed to be stronger individually, and something I'm still working on. Like if you can get closer to being right in yourself, then you won't take your shit out into that relationship. But that's a constant process. Sometimes I feel like I'm killing it, you know, or I'm like, I'm on top of it all. And other times I'm like, who would want me?
It's the ongoing problem, like people bringing baggage into their next relationship. It just never ends.
It's really hard not to. I mean, I it's not that I – my biggest problem in – I keep – as I said, I keep waiting to be struck in the head by like, oh, this is undeniable. But I think actually the fact that I had a really good one is almost to my detriment because – if I might not give certain things a chance that I should. And I think I've probably done that a little bit since. Yeah, I think it's I don't think there's any right way to do these things. You just got to keep giving it a crack.
I agree. And I was just thinking, like, we bring baggage into our relationships, but then we also, over time, if you're with someone for an extended period of time, you start to accumulate baggage within that relationship,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just think for me, I've put a lot of thought into it recently, and, you know, I look around and I see a lot of friends with failed relationships and marriages, and I look at our society, and it's just failed relationship after failed relationship. And yeah. I must admit, I just get really negative on it. I'm like, men and women, well, humans aren't meant to live in couples, maybe. I don't know. Like, are we doing it wrong? But then I'm just kind of like, yeah. I really think it's, again, this is a huge topic, but I think a lot of it comes down to tolerance, forgiveness, and ongoing growth within the relationship. Yeah. Maybe. But then I don't know.
I think it's really easy to grow apart. I think, like, if you've got, there's this nice idea that really, like, you would co-create a relationship with someone, you know what I mean? Like, ideally, that's what I'd like to see, where I meet someone that's really like, this is the kind of life I want to live. Does this align with what you want? And then that's just like, let's keep kind of talking through that growth together, and that you grow independently but together. You know, it's a lovely kind of thing to say. But actually, it actually requires both people to be very focused on their own personal growth, so that I don't bring that shit in. But also, like, I said it on one of my dating profiles. I was like, something about a relationship, and I was like, you've got to actually nurture it in a way that you would anything else you want to succeed. So, like, if you want your fucking podcast to succeed, you got to put the fucking work in. If you start not showing up, then people aren't going to be interested. If you want your job to be fruitful, if you want your kids to grow up well. That's a really good lens for me to think. Like, if I want my kids to grow up well and to be feeling good, I need to put the work in constantly. As soon as I'm deviating from that, and that happens with all parents, as soon as you start to switch off because shit's hard and shit's going on for you and you're not putting the work in the way that you are at your best, you will see negative outcomes in your kids. That's a relationship. It's the most powerful relationship you have. Then you think about someone who's supposed to be your life partner. That's probably the biggest lesson I learned in the last one. I let the work slip. I just let it. I was like, we're sweet. And I let the work slip. And I think we both did. So that it's like you got to keep showing up. It's not always fun to go to work, if you want to think about it that way. But this is like it's sometimes shit's hard, and you got to do the tasks that are not always like beautifully romantic and hit all the buttons and the fucking and the nights out. Sometimes it's like the hard conversations and the cleaning the house
and throw kids into the mix.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, do you think couples have a responsibility to make it work for the kids?
I thought that for a long time, and I think you should, until it really, really doesn't. Like, there's a decision point where two happy homes are better than none.
Yeah.
So, like,
that's a good point.
If I think people jump at it too fast without doing the work, but if you've done the work, or if there's like a real breakdown where, you know, you can't come back from it, then like, it then becomes the how do we form a really good relationship post relationship? How do we co-parent? And then that's where the work comes. The work doesn't stop because you break up. It's like fucking even harder.
True.
It's even harder, man.
True, man. Dude, it's been epic. It's been like almost 2 hours, man. And I'm just like, love it. I feel like I could keep talking, but, you know, I've got to go get my kids.
Yeah, man.
You know, and it's been really satisfying. I didn't actually expect it to go off on that tangent talking about
that's cool
relationships. Yeah, it's a again, like, sorry, just to end on this.
Yeah,
a lot of dudes, they wouldn't talk publicly about their views on relationships and what's needed. They might talk with their mates about it, but again, I just think it's really important for dudes to start talking about that. Like, how can we be better in them, and how can we, you know, what's our role in them? It's changed. It's evolved since our parents were you know, young. And I think we need to really consider that.
So 100%.
Yeah. Man. But anyway, listen, I ask all guests to come with a cause. So your cause is pretty obvious, but what would you like to advocate or support today?
Equal playing field in PNG. So equal playing field globally. So you can find us on all good socials. Equal playing field, just look that up.
Okay.
We're the Papua New Guinean one. There's someone else who's tried to steal a name, but
another founder. So listen, I'll put a link to all the
So there's PNG one and there's Australian one. That's what we're kicking off now. So if you've got if you're in Oz or if you want to support us in any way, just link up with us. You know, you can give, you can just be connected. If our ideas are something you want to see in your community, wherever you are in the world, and you're an organization or whatever, you've got big ideas. I fucking love talking to people with big ideas. If you're Aussies and you've got kids that are in primary school or even secondary school, and you're thinking like you really want to create a community of social media delay, reach out. That's what we're doing here in Australia. If you want to work with men in your community, you want to do sort of holistic physical and mental well-being with men, then contact us. Get amongst us. Find us on socials. I fucking hate socials. I've said that. I'm trying to delay them, but we've got to use them.
Well, they're necessary, I think. But we've got to use them for good, not evil, right?
Yeah.
So I'll put a link to those socials and any other way to contact Adam via Adam's episode show notes.
Obviously, find me on the dating apps as well.
Yeah, dude. Do you have an alias on them?
Nah, man. Just
saying. Here's a question for you. Do you put a picture up of you and your mum?
No, that's a great move.
I heard that's a good move.
Is it?
I don't know.
Probably for finding the right type of guys guys like me. I'm all the way one way or the other way. It's either like I'm really just trying to find a good time or the love of my life. There's no real in between.
I mean, what do you? I guess are you putting out there like a good wholesome image? Like, what are you trying to attract? Yeah. Like, I guess what you put out there is what you'll attract. Right?
Look, you try and be a little bit funny, but at the same time, it's like. I mean, you don't listen, like you don't want to go out and be like, hey, I'm looking for the love of my life, but that's, you know.
Yeah. I'm just asking for a friend, right?
Yeah,
Do girls like the bald guys with a beard? Just asking for a friend.
Thanks, man. This is what I, nice one. This is what I always tell. You got any hair on your chest, bro? Have you been shaving it or what?
No, I try to keep it tidy, trimmed down.
Okay. Well, I say that there's a... I said that there's a small niche of women who like bald guys with hairy bodies.
Really?
And that's who I want to play to.
Dude.
You know what I mean?
Small niche? Large niche.
I hope so,
I think it's the opposite to what they've got.
Girls start a Facebook group and...
It's primal. Is there a Facebook group for that?
There could be, and I could maybe speak at their events.
Dude, really?
That'd be good. I can invite you along.
Do you want me to put a link to your Tinder profile?
Nah, man. It'll
be the first time. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't think you can have a link to them. I don't know.
I know you're kidding, man. But listen, I'll put a link to ways to get in touch with Adam and his awesome initiative, Equal Playing Field, on his episode show notes. And you can find Adam's episode on terriblehappytalks.com. And there's also links to all the various platforms that this podcast is found, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, Buzzsprout, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn Radio. There's actually a couple other random ones that I'm on that's been picked up on. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Find the platform that works best for your device. And if you subscribe, it'd be great. I always feel weird telling people, like and subscribe and all that shit, but it does help the show. But if you don't do that, look, thanks for listening anyway. And listen, brother, I've got a couple of presents for you.
Oh, I love presents.
Okay, so the first one's actually not with us, but every guest on the Terrible Happy Talks podcast gets a free pair of Indosoles.
Oh, so good.
From our friends at Indosole, Kai Paul, Kyle Parsons, absolute legendary humans and people I consider good friends will be sending you a pair of flip-flops or slides. We call them thongs in Australia, but the Americans call them flip-flops.
Weirdos.
And Kiwis call them jandals. Did you know?
Jandals, such a weird scene.
This is Kiwis. Kiwis, I like them so much and their country's
love
so...
Love them and hate
them. Their country's so good.
Oh, it's my favourite place in the world.
God,
man.
They fucking talk weird and say weird shit like jandals.
They're the funnest to take the piss
and
out of.
Chili bin. And the weird thing about it is, like, we sound just as bad to them.
Yeah.
I was talking to a Kiwi friend the other day, and she was giving me shit for saying necklace. What? I'm like, how do you say?
What do they say?
Nicholas. And she's like, oh, you Aussies will never learn. I'm like, what do you mean? You'll never learn. Like, it's, I know.
Yeah, man.
So you'll be getting a free pair of shoes.
Sick.
And the other thing is I give these to all guests that have been on the show. You get the Terrible Habit Talk Circle logo sticker. Now, it's only a sticker, but there's now only...
Put it on my car.
You're now THT alumni, and there's only 88 of those in circulation. So thank you.
It's cryptocurrency, bro.
It's cryptocurrency. Dude, we didn't even talk about cryptocurrency.
We'll do it in the next one. We're doing Kokoda in a day again next year. So we didn't actually end up talking about it, but we'll talk about it next time. I'm going to try and get over and do Kokoda track in a day. Next year.
What? In a day?
Yeah. So
Is that possible?
That's what we did.
Doesn't it take
a
week?
It's supposed to take anywhere from sort of 7 to 14 days.
Dude, why are you such a machine?
So we replicated Kokoda on Mount Kira, and that's what I did a few months ago.
Up and down.
Yeah.
What's the quickest you can get up Mount Kira? The reason I ask is because when I was at uni doing my PE degree, we had a competition to get up there, and I got up it in 13 minutes.
Yeah, that's good.
Is it all right?
That's solid, yeah.
That's pretty
awesome. That's really fast, man.
Good. It's one thing I've always been good at, scrambling.
Yeah.
Hiking, scrambling. I think some short and
You went up Slippery Jack then? You went up the real steep
bar? Steep bit, yeah. Straight up it.
That's the move, man, Slippery Jack. Look, I did it. I did 22 hours to do 104 Ks, and then
so what? You just kept going up and down.
6,400 meters elevation. It was. I made a course there in Mount Brisbane, like all through the mountain bike trails, all crazy shit. Yeah, it's like fucking steep scrambling shit. It was mental.
See, dude, people like you just function on a different level. Who thinks to do that? And I bet you're a kick-ass fighter. Like,
because
I want to talk
compared
about that.
Compared to maybe the average Joe, I'm okay. If I fought anyone, I'd just take him to the ground and submit him. But
so you go for submission, not strikes?
I can strike a bit, but I would tackle someone to the ground for sure.
Is that your go-to?
I would throw a little bit, and then I'd go to the ground. Yeah,
choke him out.
Yeah,
or armbar, leg bar.
I'd probably triangle.
I was gonna say triangle.
Yeah, triangle's my move for sure.
You know, it's funny, like because I could never watch UFC for a long time, and it was too violent. I was like, I was a yoga and surf dude, and I'm into skateboarding and. And it's just recently, but I've always like loved to kickbox Muay Thai, mainly because I've been really inspired by this guy, Brett Harriet, who has a boxing gym in town.
And, yeah, he's a legend.
And I used to train with him about 10 years ago in kickboxing until I hurt my ankle. And anyway, and I just couldn't watch it, but it's just recently I'm like, I'm really into it. And it's like, I've got a new sport again because I stopped watching sport. I don't know about you, but I'm like, but now it's like,
it's the only sport I watch. It's the only sport.
And I don't see it as violent anymore because I know how well tuned these athletes are.
Yeah.
You know, they're so trained for this, you know, and
I'm like one of the worst fighters in my gym, but I mean, it's a world class gym.
I mean, you got Alexander Volkanovski.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So they got proper fighters, man. And I wanna do a fight next year, but I've got to get past these runs. I've had a boxing fight before, but I wanna have an
amateur.
Yeah, just randomly. Dude, yeah.
You're man, that's it. Like, you're coming back on the podcast.
Yeah, cool, man.
Soon.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Catch ups with Adam. Anyway, man, listen, I've got to go.
Beautiful.
I've got dad duties, but you know, have you got anything else you want to say? Something funny?
Nah, man. Oh, you can't put me on the spot. I'll tell you about it. No, too late. You want. Too late. Oh, you're going to give me the last track. Damn it.
Crush Organics makes the best CBD oils and topicals. Go to crushorganics.com, that's crushorganics.com, and use code THT to get that epic 40% discount. It makes a huge difference. I advocate for CBD products because they've done so much for me physically and mentally. So really helps me post-exercise with recovery, and it's also done loads for me in terms of getting me in really good sleep patterns and also reducing feelings of anxiety. So get on crushorganics.com. Indosole Footwear have been a long-time supporter of THT. They make
footwear like sandals, flip-flops, slides from repurposed motor vehicle tires. So tires that would usually go into landfill, Indosol get them and they process them down and turn them into footwear that looks awesome. They're a B Corp certified company, which is the same company that Patagonia is certified by. And actually Patagonia created that certification. So they do everything fair trade and ethically. They're a rad company and I'm so stoked to be affiliated with them. So use code THT at Indosol.com. That's Indosole.com. Use the code THT, get the 15% discount, support THT and support conscious consumerism.